हरिः
ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे So then in the conversation, Krishna came to meet the Pandavas in the forest, and after being greeted and seated, then they started the conversations. Arjuna has discussed, you know, all what's happened with him. Then Yudhishthira has discussed some things, and now Krishna will speak with Draupadi. Krishna spoke kindly to Draupadi, saying that it was by good fortune that she had attained such virtuous men as her husbands. He gave her news of her sons who were staying in Drupad's kingdom, and who also spent time in Dwarka, where Subhadra showered them with motherly love. Right, because the co-wives, but there's still whatever the children of one wife are everybody's children. It means, of course, you give preference to the one, but they'll all deal as mothers. You know, they won't try to become the main mother. No, they'll always, you know, it's always going to be there. So that motherly affection is always there. Krishna's own son, Prajumna, was instructing all the Pandavas' sons in the martial arts, right? So they're being, you know, trained in all that. So during this 12 years and all that, then they've been trained, you know, properly how to as in the Kshatriya duties and all that. So when actually comes time for the battle, they'll already be trained in them. They'll be, you know, mature and trained. When Krishna fell silent, Yudhishthira said, "O Keshava, there is no doubt that you are our highest refuge. We are always under your protection. When the time comes, you will surely do everything to restore us to our kingdom." Then they saw Markandeya Rishi approaching, that immortal sage, who appeared like a youth of no more than 16 years, was cheerful, dressed only in a loincloth and holding a water pot. Now, you know, he'd been around. So he has that immortal thing, but he always looks like a youth. So he'll live for the lifetime of Brahman, but always as you know, in that youthful condition of 16 years old. And being, you know, having no material desire, this and that, they walk around in kopins. No one minds. That mood and all that on the social platform is they don't have any material desire. So in that way, they're innocent, like children. And so then that's, you know, everybody's comfortable. The Pandavas, Krishna, and all the Brahmins stood to offer respects, then offered Markandeya a seat of honor. After he had been worshipped, the Argya, and presented with sweet water and forest fruits, Krishna said, "We all wish to hear your most excellent words. Kindly narrate to us the ancient histories of virtuous kings and rishis, replete with moral and spiritual instruction." Right? Because you want both. The moral instruction is how you're supposed to properly behave in that situation in line with the laws of the Lord. And spiritual means how you're doing that to please the Lord. Right? So you have to have both aspects are there. Because some will talk morality, some will talk spiritual. And if it's spiritual, we don't have to follow all these rules. But they're Krishna's rules. And others say, no, it's the rules, and only by the rules, then you can be spiritual. No, spiritual is transcendental to these. These are just the medium you use. And so therefore, then it works nicely. So we have to understand is that the spiritual is transcendental to the other, but they're the medium you use. They're the natural form of it. In other words, in the spiritual world, those forms are there. In the material world, they're known as morality. Right? But in the spiritual world, they're just the natural ways that the servants of the Lord act. At that moment, Narada also arrived and was received. He too wished to hear Markandeya speak in Krishna's presence. With those two personalities sitting amidst the Pandavas and the numerous Brahmins, it seemed as if the sun and moon were seated together in the presence of the planets. Everyone waited for Markandeya to speak. They all knew that the sage had lived since the beginning of the material creation and was therefore acquainted with countless histories of great sages and kings. Right, because now we're in the 51st year of Brahma, so that's half of his lifetime. So that means 151 trillion years he's been around. So, you know, plenty of nice, you know, stories to tell. The Supreme Lord Narayana had personally instructed him, and thus he possessed profound spiritual understanding. Yudhishthira asks, "Please tell me, O highly learned one, how a man receives the results of his own deeds. I am mystified upon seeing how I have been deprived of my kingdom, while Dhritarashtra's sinful sons prosper. Does one receive the results of his actions during the same life, or do they visit him only in a later existence? How do the results of a man's acts follow him after death? Where do they repose when he gives up his body?" Right? So he's asking is that I'm doing everything right, but I'm losing the kingdom. Duryodhana is doing nothing right. He's gaining the kingdom. So are the results of this of my activities of this life any gain any in this life, or is it next life? Right? And if so, how do they go with him? Right? He's performed the activity. How do they go, and where do they stay? Markandeya remained silent for a moment. He looked around at the concourse of people assembled in the forest clearing. It seemed as if Yudhishthira were still in Indraprastha, seated in an assembly hall, raising... Right. So he's looking at it as that Yudhishthira's in the forest. And even though he's in the forest, he's still sitting there. You know, Krishna's coming, Narad's coming, the great sages are there, he's surrounded by Brahmins, he has his brothers. They all have that proper attitude as great Brahmins and great Kshatriyas and performance of their duties. So only externally it's exchanged from the court of the great, you know, the great palace to his court being held in the forest, you know, sitting on whatever simple things are there. But the attitude, the mood is exactly the same. Because he'll have gone to all courts of all, you know, Brahma's court and this and that and all over the universe, all the great kings and all that. And so he sees what's the actual thread. That's the point of wisdom. You see what's the real thing that's important. Raising his right hand, the sage then replied, "The embodied soul travels from life to life as a result of his own acts, good and bad. At no time is the soul without a body as long as he remains within this world, trying to enjoy his senses. The soul is covered first by a subtle body made of mind, intelligence, and false ego. The subtle body carries the recollection of every experience the soul has ever had, and thus assumes various gross material forms." Right? So his subtle body, you know, the mind, intelligence, false ego, that's always with the living entity. So he's covered by that as soon as he comes into the material existence. And so then he always has a material body. So only by coming to the transcendental platform and going back to Godhead, one loses them, both gross and subtle material bodies, and then one is attains the spiritual body. Yamaraj controls all this, right? It means of what you've done and what gross body you're supposed to get, that's what he takes care of. Indeed, Yamaraj keeps track of every soul within the material universe. Right? He's empowered by the Lord to do this. He's a jiva like all of us, but he is empowered by the Lord to be able to keep track of every living entity and what is their position, what they've done. And so then, you know, with his assistance, they establish what gross bodies everyone's supposed to have. He is empowered by the all-knowing Supreme Soul who resides in the heart of every living being. Thus does Yamaraj award all beings their just deserts. He never makes a mistake in this regard. So material nature, and we see Yamaraj, they never make the mistake because they're empowered by the Lord to do these works. Markandeya paused to allow his listeners to absorb what he was saying. "Some men enjoy in this life, but not in the next. Some in the next, but not in this, and others in both. Some men enjoy neither in this life nor in the next." Right? So you can get four positions between this life and the next. Enjoying now, not later. Not enjoying now, enjoying later. Enjoying now, enjoying later. And not enjoying now, and not enjoying later. "As far as you brothers are concerned, you are virtuous and have been born only to fulfill the God's purpose. You are great devotees of the Supreme Lord and thus cannot be affected by karmic reactions. Your apparent setback will ultimately lead to your everlasting fame and happiness. You will be glorified in the world of men, and at the end of your lives you will attain the highest abode." So they're an example of, you know, everything goes nicely now and later. But because he says these things happening are not by karma. This is happening, you've come to fulfill the God's purpose. So therefore, then things are being arranged in this way. And by this, you're being glorified. So here we are, 5,000 years after this incident. We're still reading these stories in detail. You know, it's like that. Okay, a few thousand years after somebody, you know, we hear about, you know, okay, Nero is fiddling on his fiddle and, you know, how you say, Caesar is being stabbed by his, you know, one of his close friends, and so he's saying et tu, Brute, and, you know, things like this. And but not their whole life and all the details and everything, and we're happy to hear and all that, and we're learning from that. These others you just hear as entertainment, but here you're actually hearing, and you're able to apply this into your own life, you know. So that's the difference here. That's why he's saying is that it everlasting fame. So these stories, Bhagavad Gita, spoken by Gita, is still being studied today. So that's the thing, is when things are done on the transcendental platform, then those always remain. And things done on the material platform, of course, they go by the wayside. Some little bit maybe of importance, but that's it. And with time, when values change in the people, they don't care about these anymore. Yudhishthira reflected on the sage's reply. Then he asked, O learned sage, in this world our lives are detached, dedicated to the brahmanas. If it pleases you, kindly tell us about a Brahman's greatness and glories. In response, the Rishi recounted numerous ancient histories. His audience was wrapped in wonder. He also described the creation of the universe, which had been he had personally witnessed, and the nature of the destruction that occurs at the end of Brahma's day, a period of millions of years. He described how he had floated on the causal water out of which creation occurs, as it rose and covered the lower and middle planets. At the end of that inundation, he had seen a wonderful child lying on a banyan leaf. I was struck with amazement. I could not understand how a child could have survived when the entire universe was destroyed. The boy was effulgent, and his face was as beautiful as the moon. His eyes resembled full-blown lotuses, and his body was a blackish color. He lay there smiling and sucking his toe. You know, like babies that can lay on their back and they're so flexible they can suck on their own toe. Then on his chest I saw the mark of Srivatsa and thought that it must be Vishnu, although I could not be sure. As I approached him, he said, My child, I know you are eager to rest. O Markandeya, enter my body and rest a while. I am pleased with you. Right, because everything's been absorbed into the Lord and all these things. When the boy addressed me, I lost all sense of my identity and forgot my material designations. He opened his mouth and I felt myself drawn into it. Suddenly entering his stomach, I beheld the whole earth with all its cities and kingdoms. I wandered about for some time seeing all the familiar sights, including the Ganges and her tributaries, the Himalayas and the forests in which I had performed asceticism. I also saw the race of celestials headed by Indra, as well as the races of Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Though I wandered about within that boy's body for a long time, I never did find its limit, right? Because even though he's in that form, he's unlimited. But he takes that form. So he has that natural form, but he's unlimited. So that's the glory of the Supreme Person, is that these inconceivable qualities are there in the Lord. Is that for us, they are contradictory and they're a problem. But for the Lord, they're not. Because he's the source of them. He's the source of form. He's the source of unlimited. So the two can remain together. Because the unlimited, it's coming from his form. Confused, I began to worship the Supreme Lord in my thoughts and words. Suddenly I found myself emerging again, and once more I saw him lying on the banyan leaf. I worshiped that immeasurably powerful being who had swallowed up the entire universe. And I placed my head at his feet. I asked him who he was and about his purpose, why he was lying there with the universes held within his body. Right, so he's there, everything's within him, like that. Because the destruction is there, but it all is still within him. It's not that it's destroyed in the form that we see, but the principle of it and the things themselves are still within the Lord. The child spoke in such a way that my material illusions were completely dispelled. He told me that he was the original Supreme Person, from whom everything emanates and into whom it enters at its end. I was amazed to hear him speak of his own glories. He is known as Vishnu, Narayana, and Hari. But he possesses innumerable other names. That all-knowing personality then told me that I should remain within his body until Brahma again awoke and recreated the universe. He disappeared from my sight, and I found myself back within the very varied creation I had seen within him. Finishing his narration, Markandeya looked across at Krishna. King Yudhishthira, that lotus-eyed boy whom I saw at the end of creation has now appeared as Krishna. He has become your relative and friend. No doubt you should know him to be the ancient supreme person, the inconceivable Hari and the original personality of Godhead. He granted me the boon that my memory would never fail and that my death would come only when I wanted it. Seeing Krishna sitting there wearing a yellow silken garment, I am remembering that boy. Do not doubt that it was he whom I saw at the waters of devastation. O hero among men, this entire creation rests within him, even as air rests within ether. Right? So ether has no, ether is space, so it can accommodate all the air very nicely. And even where there's places where there is no air, it's still ether is there. Take refuge in Krishna, for there are none superior to him. Hearing the Rishi's words, the Pandavas bowed down before Krishna. Krishna smiled gently and spoke comforting words to them. He glanced affectionately at Markandeya, who gazed back at Krishna with love. Yudhishthira then asked Markandeya to describe the future. Kali Yuga, the darkest age, was approaching. Yudhishthira wanted to know what would happen to the world at that time. Markandeya told him in detail how everything would become more and more degraded. People would become irreligious and would thus be oppressed by misery. Right? Because if you're religious, you're working with Krishna's laws, then things work out very nicely. But if you go against these, then you become more and more miserable. So as people become more and more degraded, more self-centered, less willing to follow authority, then the acts that they do aren't beneficial for themselves, and so therefore they become more and more miserable. The age would culminate in the appearance of the Kalki avatar, would restore order to the world and bring about Satyayuga, the golden age. Yudhishthira and Markandeya discussed for hours, and the audience remained fixed on hearing Markandeya's detailed responses, replete with accounts of the different kings, sages, and celestials who had lived throughout the ages. Right? So someone qualified Yudhishthira is asking questions and all that. No one else needs to ask because the proper questions will be asked. And then Markandeya can give perfect answers, and so then they can all just there. So you see with these great big conversations, it's not that many people aren't involved, it's just that only these two people are speaking, or a very small group. And that's enough, and then everybody gains. It's not that, oh, well, everybody gets to ask a question, or everybody. You can do that, but then the problem is the quality of the conversation may drop. Here you have two such qualified persons. Their discussion, you'll get more out of it than that if you ask, you know, all kinds of funny questions. As evening approached, Yudhishthira finally stopped asking questions. Along with his brothers, he worshipped Markandeya. Then the Rishi took his leave. Narada also left at that time, ascending into the skyways. Okay, so now after the sages disappearing, then we'll see how the conversations continue between the Pandavas and Lord Krishna. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki.